Let's look over the Gemara again that we did yesterday on Kuf Talad on the base Tani Agra Chamur Debe Ava. So we have a Braisa from Agra. Of Ugvina Necholen Bapi Korin. Notice we're going to see that the normal requirements to separate between Basar and Cholav, or let's say Basar and Gvina in any sequence, as we'll see, which are number one, Netilas Yadayim, number two, Kinuach HaPen, those requirements are lifted in the case of Of. And that's called Apikorin. Hu Tani Lei, Vu Amar Lei. He brought this price and he explained the price. What did he mean by Derech Hefker? How is Basar Of different than Basar Behema? That with regard to Basar Of, below Netilas Yadayim u below Kinuach HaPeh, these requirements after Basar, to make sure that you separate between Gvina and Basar, namely Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh, they do not apply to Of. Now, when we talk about sequence here, we can talk about two possibilities. Number one would be where he started with Basar and then he went to Gvina, and the same would be true where he started with Of and then he went to Gvina, or the opposite, he started with Gvina and then he went to either Of or Basar. What we discussed yesterday, just to recap in a summary way, is the following: that this Gemara is operating without the 6-hour separation between meat and milk, which is going to come up later on in the sugya on Daf Kuf Ches. We're not ready for that. So right now the Gemara is operating without that separation. Now, if you're eating Gvina and then immediately after Gvina you're eating meat, for example, then even after the sugya of Shehiyah Misud L'Sud, of waiting the 6 hours, we'll call it, right? Even without that, that sugya only applies when you start with meat and you end with Gvina. Here he started, let's say, with Gvina, I'm going through the various possibilities, and then he went on to eat meat. If he's eating Basa Behema after the Gvina, which he can do immediately, even according to our minhag, after the Gemara of Shehiyah, then he needs Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh. So if I bring you out Gvina and then I bring you out Basar, I'm talking about Basar Behema, then you need Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh to separate between the two. However, if I bring you out Gvina and then I bring you out Of, and you're going to eat the Of immediately after Gvina, you do not need Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh. However, although that is our sugya, the Rishonim, whether it's the Rosh, the Rambam, and others, bring down a minhag that if you eat Of, and just 1 second, let me just go through the minhag again. Ha'olam Noeg. 1 second. Let me go through the whole thing just to make sure I have the calculation correctly. He says the following: Divrei HaBraisa, this Braisa that differentiates between Basar Behema and Basar Of, Nemru Bein Le'inyan Achilas Of Achar Gvina, Bein Le'inyan Gvina Achar Of. So it doesn't matter what sequence. Even if you started with Of, we're not going to wait 6 hours, because our sugya is not predicated on the halach of hamtana of shehiyah between suda l'suda. So therefore you ate Of and now you're immediately eating Gvina. Had it been Basar and then Gvina, you would require Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh, because Basar is Doraisa but Of is only Drabanan, and therefore we waive these requirements. Now our minhag is that even after the eating of chicken, of Of, we don't eat Gvina until we wait afterwards the 6 hours. So if he eats gvina and then he eats oaf, that's going to be halacha lemaisa, the chiddush of this brisa. What I mean by halacha lemaisa is meaning in our context, in our Shulchan Aruch, even after we have the shehiyah, but he started with gvina. And here's where we're going to have a distinction between basar oaf and basar behema. If after his gvina he eats basar behema, he's going to need both netil sidaim and kinua chaper. But if on the other hand he started with oaf, I'm sorry, he started with gvina and then he ate oaf, so in such a case he doesn't need kinuach or netila. And that's because oaf is the rabbanon. So again, if he started with basar behema or basar oaf, so our minig is that we need hamtana. If on the other hand he started with gvina, he can eat immediately meat. But here we differentiate between meat and chicken. In the case of meat, he's going to require a separation between the gvina that he ate first and the meat that he ate second, in these two ways. Whereas if he started with oaf, I'm sorry, if he started with gvina and then he ate meat, that's when he needs a separation. If he started with gvina and then he ate oaf, he doesn't need this separation. Good. Now the last thing we did yesterday was the story of Rabbi Yitzchak. And the story of Rabbi Yitzchak, if you recall, was that they first brought him cheese. After he ate the cheese, they brought him basar behema. And the surprise was that he didn't wash his hands. It seems that kinuach hapeh did, but not netilas yadayim. So they said to him, well, what about the brais of Agra? And the brais of Agra implies that although we do away with this requirement of netilas yadayim with regard to oaf, if he's eating oaf after the gavina, but if he's eating basar behema, and that was the case of Yitzchak, then he requires netilas yadayim. Why wasn't he makpid on netilas yadayim? So Amalahu, so Rabbi Yitzchak differentiates between Laila and Yom. And he says that when did the Brice of Agra require Netilas Yadayim? That's at night. Why? Because at night it's not easy for him in the dark to guarantee that his hands are completely clean of some oily substance that's cheesy, that comes from the cheese. So he has to do it until he died. But during the day, he can see it clearly. And that leads us to the brisa of Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel about kinuach peh and adochas peh, which is the last gemara on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis.
I taught this gemara in my Maadis. It was so confusing for these students because they have their custom. And then they had to try to put everything together again.
So that's why, if we understand this Gemara is before that custom, then we're talking about eating cheese and meat almost simultaneously, right? But immediately miyad, in any sequence that you want to come up with. And now we're going to differentiate between basar behema and basar oaf. Okay. Now I have here a sefer called Moreshes Moshe, and I want to share with you a few things that I found here. First of all, with regard to the Mishnah that we studied yesterday, and Beis Hillel says that you're not allowed to put oaf and gvina on the same table that you're eating from, he has a number of Rishonim that address the following question. We don't find, with regard to other Isurim, an Isur Halah. Nowhere does it say that you can't put a Chazer Treif on the table. Why is it that here, with regard to Basar B'Chalav, we have this Chumrah of Halah? So first he quotes the Ramban. Now when I say the Ramban, this is Ramban and all his Talmidim, you know, the Ritva, the Rashba, the Ran. And they say, because Basar B'Chalav is unique, each element is Heter Bifnei Atzmo, And therefore, since basar is heter and chalav is heter, the combination thereof is lo bedili minei inshi. We're not used to separating ourselves from the two. Again, we ourselves are bedili inshi, but that's only because of the Isra Allah and the like. But before you had all those zeros, it was very common to take basar and chalav, both of which are mutter, onto themselves and put them together. We eat them both. It's not like Chazer where it's bedili minei, nobody would touch it. But then he quotes another approach in the name of the Be'er Sheva, and he says that since the Torah says lo sevashel gedi b'chalev imo, the tzdukim jumped up and they said that anything other than gedi b'chalev imo is mutter. And Chazal wanted to be motzi liban lohotzi mi liban shalat tzdukim. And we find very often that Chazal made special takanas in order to battle against the influence of the tzdukim, and this is one of them. But now we have to raise the following question. According to the Ramban, the Ritva, the Ran that we mentioned before, that the reason why we find the Chumrah of Halah in the case of Asa B'chov is because it's Heter. This is Heter and that's Heter. What do we do with the case of Chalas Chutzlaretz? In the case of Chalas Chutzlaretz, we said the following, that since Chalas Chutzlaretz is the Rabbanon, we're not going to make a gzer of Halah. Meaning that if it was Chalas Eretz Yisrael, which is Asur L'Zorim Midoraisa with the Rechi of Misa, then it would be an Iser Halah. In fact, I would have gone a step further. I would have said that even in the case of Chalas Chutzlaretz, if it was in Eretz Yisrael, then apparently Abaye would institute the Gzera of Halah. Now, when it comes to Challah, Challah is a classic case of an Isur. It doesn't fit this criterion of Basar B'Chalav, Zeh Heter B'Fnei Atzmo, Zeh Heter B'Fnei Atzmo. Why then do we find an Iser Halah with regard to Challah? So he quotes a number of answers here in the Moreshes Moshe. The first he quotes in the name of the Shach and the Pri Chodosh. Then we have they quote a pasuk Alechem Yichya Adam. Really, it says Lo Alechem Levado Yichya, but Alechem Yichya Adam. So bread is the staple of life. Rogil Bo Kol Hashana, and therefore it's Lo Bedili Bnei Inchi. What's the difference between this lechem and another lechem? So I'm constantly eating bread, and this bread, it turns out, is Truma, is Challah. So I wouldn't pay any attention to it. So we have to be more machmir in Challah than we would in any other Isur for two reasons. First of all, because we're ragil, it's the staple of life. Let's break bread together, as we say. And secondly, because what's the difference between this Challah and this Challah? They're both Challahs, just that one Challah is Chulin, the other Challah is Challah. And then he quotes a second answer in the name of the Mata Yonason. And he says that since the Yisrael is sitting at the table and he's watching the Kohen eat this challah, he thinks that the Kohen is obviously eating something that you're allowed to eat. He doesn't realize that only he's allowed to eat it. So he makes that differentiation. In the case of Chaza, no one's eating the Chaza. Then he has another teretz in the name of the Yad Yehuda, that challah is lo mois velo bedili bnei inshi. I think what he means is that a person doesn't have in Hebrew we call it slidah, in other words, he doesn't naturally find challah to be repulsive. Again, in this case, the challah was uplifted to a higher level of kedusha, but it's not like something which is inherently asur, and therefore he could stay away from it. Finally, he quotes an answer of the Makar Chaim, and he says that kevet sheyachal lihishoyel al challah, al kain chashiva hetera kamo neder, the kevet de biatzmo heter hu ilav haneder choshev hetera. We're talking about something that's inherently mutter, just that you took a neder and you created and imposed an iser on the object, but that iser could be removed. And that's called she'ela. She'ela means you can go to a chacham and you can be shoal on a neder.
With challah, you can do that.
Yeah. Because challah is also a din of haflah, that you said harezu challah. Now I can go to a chacham and say I made a mistake, I want to make this challah, not that challah. Uh-huh. So it means it's an isur that's not inherent, it's a temporary kind of isur. initially it was heter, now it became also because of my hafrasha. Now I can remove that iser by simply being shoel. So that puts it in a separate category of lo b'dili minei inshi. I would say in brisket terminology, what he means is that this is an iser gavra, not an iser chevta. Now we have a machlokas between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai about Oaf and Gvina al Shulchan Echad, whereas Beit Shammai is reported to be the Mekilim, Beis Hillel the Machmirim. But yet, when the Mishnah emphasizes Ola that of Oaf and Gvina, and I emphasize the word Gvina, it's in contrast to the first Mishnah, because elsewhere it says Cholav, it says Cholav Basar. So why does the Mishnah switch from Cholav to Gvina? Do you remember we mentioned this in the past?
The Gemara mentioned it, no?
No, the Gemara never actually asked this question. It's only in the Achronim. The Gemara lets it pass. And the Gemara is assuming that Gvina is just another example of Cholav. But in truth, if you're sensitive to the language of the Mishnah actually changes its lingo. Because back in the beginning it says Asa Levasha Becholav, and now when it gets to Allah, it switches to Gvina. So I'm going to go through a few of the answers to this question, summarized again here in the Moreshes Moshe. First, he has a sefer called Shoshanim LeDavid, who says that the Mishnah wants to give you a chiddush. Certainly in the case of Cholav al Shulchan, you have to worry about Nishpach, that a liquid could spill and it might fall into the meat. But in the case of Gvina, which is a solid, dry substance, you would think that there's no Iser, nothing is dripping. There's no liquid that's jumping around here, that's splashing around. Kamashbalan, the Mishnah wants to tell you that even Gvina is prohibited to put on the Shulchan. Because there might be negiah, there might be touching, even if there's no shficha, but there's touching. Then he quotes a second answer, the name of the Rashash and the Aruch HaShulchan. They say, no, just the opposite. Only gvina you're not allowed to put on the table, but cholav is mutter, because milk is always brought in, by virtue of the fact that it's liquid, it's always brought to the table in a receptacle. And if it's in a receptacle, there's no chashash negiah, or blia, one to the other. Only in the case of gvina, which could be brought out to the table naked, so to speak, without a receptacle, that's where we have to worry about some sort of contact between the gvina and the basar. So it's very fascinating, whereas the Shoshanim LeDavid is taking the approach that we're worried about shficha primarily, and now we're extending it from shficha to the case of gvina. So shficha in the case of cholav, and now we're extending it to include Gvina, because of a new secondary worry about Negiah, the Rashash is understanding that the Iker Iser Allah is because of Negiah, and if it only applies to Gvina and not applies to Cholav. So, Allah Chalmaisa, am I allowed to fit a milk container on the same table from which I'm eating meat? This would be a machlokas between the Shoshanim LeDavid and the Rashash. Because since the milk is in a container, the Rashash is going to be matir because there's no Chashash. Of Negiah. There's only a chashash of Shvicha, but chashash of Shvicha is not enough to generate the seed, so we have to have a possibility of Negiah, and that's only in Gvina, whereas in Shoshan Ladov say Adarabba. In the case of Cholav, where there's a chashash of Shvicha, that's an even greater Chumrah, right? More reason to be mocked. Now, what would the Shoshan Ladov say about milk in a container where there's no possibility of shficha, where you close the top, the lid is very tight? I don't know. It could be it's a low plug or it might be mutta. I don't know. Then he has a third understanding, and he says that the reason why the Mishnah mentions gvina here in Halacha is because of the seifa. The seifa is matir dogim, so you're allowed to put fish and milk on the same table. And the Mishnah didn't want to mention cholav, because then you would assume when the Mishnah was matir dogim, that you were allowed to put dogim together with cholav, and that's considered a sakana. So again, this is the famous Beis Yosef, that there's a sakana if you soak fish in milk. But in the case of gvina, there's no sakana. Don't ask me why. You have to know the biology of it. And so.
Wait, is that a chiddush of the Beit Yosef? It started with him, as far as you know?
As far as I know, it starts with the Beit Yosef. Again, well, who he's basing himself on, I don't know. Now he says that this machlokas achronim, ha'im iser halah, nesar bein b'chol bein b'gvin. Okay, that's what we saw already before. According to the Shanim and David, the Israel law doesn't apply to chol because there's no chash ficha. According to the Rashash and the Orcha Shulchan, there will be an Isur in Cholov because I'm sorry, and there won't be any. And let's go over it again. Would there be an Isur of Halah and Gvina according to the Shoshanim L'David? No, because there's no Shficha. And according to the Shoshanim L'David, according to the second approach, which was the Rashash, then what we're saying is that the Iker Chashash here is Negia, and therefore we have to worry about a Gvina. In the case of milk that's brought out in a container, there's no Chashash of Negia, and therefore that would be Mut. Okay. Now, we have here Beis Hillel in our Mishnah, and then Machmir, they don't allow you to put Oaf and Gvina on the same table that you're eating from. So the Meiri says that that only applies to what he calls a Shulchan Katan, a very small table. We'll see exactly what the size of the table is. And on a small table, if you put both Oaf, and how much more so meat, and Gvina, there's a real chashash of Negia. However, if you have a very long table and you put the gvina on one end of the table and the basar on the other end of the table, that's not asur, that's mutter. Why? Because that's not a situation which you have to worry about negir.
Wait, this is even according to Beit Hillel?
We're talking about Beit Hillel. Okay. Again, Beit Shammai allows you to put them on a small table together. Yeah. But that was the kula of Beit Shammai. But according to Beit Hillel, that we have an Isra Allah, comes on the Meiri and he truncates it. It only applies to a truncated table, a very, very small table. Because then there's a chashash of negiah. But when you look in the Shulchan Aruch, guess what? You don't find any qualification whatsoever. The Shulchan Aruch is totally oblivious to this Me'iri. And the implication is that according to the Shulchan Aruch, even in our times,
sure,
we have longer
tables. The Shulchan Aruch didn't have that Me'iri.
Maybe he didn't have access to the Meiri, but it's not just the Meiri, it's the Knesset Gedolah, it's Rabbeinu Yerucham. I mean, this does appear in a number of Rishonim. The Shulchan Aruch should have made some sort of distinction between a Shulchan, you know, the size of the Shulchan. You know, there's a Shulchan where if you stretch your arm out, then you'll hit the Basar, you know, the Gvina's right in front of you. So it would seem that according to Shulchan Aruch, even Bizman HaZeh, that we don't need on these small Shulchanos, nevertheless, there's still an Isra Allah. The Isra Allah is very real today, even with a long table. However, there are poskim, like the Marshal, the Bach, the Prima Gadim, who want to claim that if he cannot stretch his arm out to reach, you know, to reach the meat that's somewhere on the table, maybe he has a friend who's eating on the table, then it's mutter. Again, I'm not paskening halacha l'maisa. I'm inclined to think that most of the poskim took the Shulchan Aruch kipshuta without any limitation. You know, there's no qualification here. You're not allowed to put the two on the same table that you're eating from. It doesn't matter that you're not going to take a measuring thing, a meter, and start to figure out this, you know, the length of the table. So let's say, Chaim, if you're eating meat and I'm eating milk, that's a problem.
I thought,
Sean, if you're eating meat and I'm eating milk, maybe that's not a problem, according to the Prima Gadim.
I thought, like, if you, I don't know.
On this table, you understand.
If we had separate mats or something, some sort of siman.
Correct. We're going to get to that later on.
Oh, I see.
We're talking about a case where there's no siman in it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now we go on to another discussion. We said in the Mishnah that this shulchan, that is also by law, that's only if you're eating from the table. But if it's just, you know, a serving, you know, there's a surface area from where they put down the various foods and then you take it smorgasbord style, that's not also. So why is, how do we understand the difference between the two? So believe it or not, there's going to be a variance and even an afkemina amongst the Rishonim and Achron about how to understand this distinction. Why is it that if it's just a Shulchan Shesudar all of us a Tavshil, then no saying Zev Itzad Zev Yenu Choshesh? So Rashi, the Rimi, Lunil, and the Bartnura, they understand that a shulchan that you eat from is once you start eating from it, very often your hands touch the food. And I did mashmashi be yode asi lisnuche zal gabi se. Once you touch the food with your hands, you might even put one on top of the other. So that's one approach. And the Ra'ah says something totally different. The Ra'ah, one of the Rishonim, he says that Shulchan Shesudar Lo just simply means that it's not Shas Achila, that right now he's not eating. And the Gzeir was B'Shas Achila. So we'll get back to this in just a minute. Don't ask me too many questions until I work this out. But again, the question is, are we saying that there's a Shash Negiah only if he's eating the food on the table because he's moving it around? He's moving the food around with his hands, and we're afraid that there'll be some sort of gear. It'll be dovek, one, you know, cheese with meat. Now it could be that Rashi and the others maybe even going a step further, they might be even worried about the possibility that he'll eat them together since they're on the table and he's moving them around with his hands. That's called the mashmashe beyoda. He might come lechol chashashu sheyomo lechol shneim biyachad, because Rashi back on the Mishnah, if you take a look, Rashi says dilma asil mechlinu ki hadadi. He might eat them together. As you start with negia and you end up eating them together. Now, if you're going to assume that Rashi's fear is that they're going to touch one another because he's handling them with his hands, then at least some of the Achronim are bewildered about the heter of Shulchan Shesudar Olav. Why? Because they think that even in the case of Shulchan Shesudar Olav, as he's organizing the table, he uses his Yodayim to organize the table, and he puts the cheese here, he puts the meat here. That there too, there should be some chash that through Mishmash Yodayim there'll be a negiya zebazeh. But if you go with the other approach, that Rashi means to say that since he's pushing, moving things around, and he's eating them, he might come to eat them together. So it's not just that the contact between the meat and the cheese is our fear, but way beyond that, we're afraid of eating. Then if it's a Shulchan Shesudar Olav, then we know Rashi's in the clear. So again, there are two ways of understanding Rashi. One way is understanding Rashi is that because of Mishmash Yodayim, there'll be a Negiah between the two. And Lechor, that could happen even on a Shulchan Shesudar Olav. The other way of understanding Rashi is that since he's moving things around with his hands, eventually he might pop them into his mouth, eat them together, and that would only apply in the Shulchan Sha'ochel. The Ra'ah, as I said before, has a whole different approach. He thinks that the difference between Shulchan Shesudar Olav, Shulchan Sha'ochel is the difference between Shas Achila and Shalom B'Shas Achila. So now we want to come up with what the poskim call the nafkemina between Rashi and the Ra'ah. Rashi as the representative of a whole school of thought. For example, according to one Achron here, I'm not sure, Dalet Heishin, maybe I'll remember who that is, but he says, Efsha de'ika nafkemina bidin shulchani, shulchan merkazi shenikra bar, a bar, I guess, ha'im choshev shulchan shesudar olav tavshil, Dilarashi also the Mamashmashi Bayo, Dilara Efsha de Mutta Kamen Shalo Ochlin al Shulchan Se. Again, I'm not sure exactly why this bar is a little bit different than other things, so maybe we'll come back to that later. But he says another nafkamina is Bimunachim Bekalim Muchusim. What would be the deal if he puts the food in covered lid with a lid cover on it. L'Rashi, if Rashi is worried about negia one from the other, is that ein chashash yidvak echad b'chavera. But l'ra'ah, the ra'ah is more interested in achila than it could be if it's shas achila, then we're worried that he might eat both. He gives another nafkimina, b'basa sheino roi l'achila. What would be a meat that's not cooked yet, it's not edible? According to Rashi, there still might be a chashash yidvak echad b'chavera that through this negia, because he's using his mishmash yadayim, he might get some of the cheese onto the meat. But according to Ra'ah, where the whole chashash is that he might eat it together because it's a chashachil and he eats off this table, but in the case of something that's raw and he doesn't eat it, then there's no chashash. So I just want to take a minute just to, before we go on in the Gemara, just to go back to this case of a bar. Efshad Yitzhak Nafkamin in Shulchan Amerkazi, a Nikra bar. Ha'im Choshev Shulchan Shesuder Olav as a Tavshil.
What exactly does it mean by a bar?
No, he just says Shulchan Merkazi. It's some sort of central, I guess he means like a smorgasbord kind of thing where everybody comes to eat from that one table.
You mean take from that one table? Not
take from
they don't eat
table.
There.
So why would it be associated? Rashi also memashmishin bay. Not sure why all of a sudden it's memashmishin bay. According to the Ra'ah, it's mutter because there's no achila from that shulchan. According to Rashi, here there's more reason to assume memashmishin bay. I don't know. Maybe because the more people get, I don't know. Not sure what he means by that. Okay, Rav Osai. Tanya, we learned in a brayso. We're on the bottom of Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. Beit Shammai Omrim Mikaneach, Beit Hillel Omrim Adiach. Now we're talking about a person who ate cheese, and now he wants to eat meat, and he has to make some sort of separation between the cheese and the meat. So Beit Shammai says that he has to be Mikaneach Espiv. Now I'm just going to give you a little bit of a preview of coming attractions. Mekaneach espiv means that he has to take something into his mouth and chew it, something that's parva, maybe a piece of bread, maybe some fruits, I don't know what. We're going to have to see. The Gemara has five different possibilities. I don't know if the number five is accurate, but a lot of different possibilities. Now, Beis Hillel has something called Hadocha Saper. That's crystal clear. That means that he takes water into his mouth and he gargles with it and spits it out. And that's what he does to separate between the Gvina and the Basar. What's totally unclear here is whether these Shitos are mutually exclusive, meaning is Beit Shammai completely excluding the requirement of Madiach Peh, and in the flip side is Beis Hillel completely excluding Mikaneach, or is it possible that one of the two shitas is machmir and it requires both. The other shita is satisfactory with one of the two. But again, we don't know which way to go. But first, the Gemara wants to know, what does it mean, mekaneach? My mekaneach, right? Beit Shammai says you need kinuach. And then Umay and Beis Hillel says you need meidiach. So what's meidiach? So now we're going to take a look at Daf Kuf Hey Amud Aleph. Elaim, if you're going to tell me that Beit Shammai Omrim Mekaneach, meaning Beit Shammai says you have to chew something, we don't know exactly what you're chewing, but he doesn't require rinsing out your hands, I'm sorry, rinsing out your mouth. Beis Hillel Omrim Meidiach V'lo Boy Mekaneach, Beis Hillel is on the other extreme. And instead of what's called mekaneach, he requires meidiach. But once he requires meidiach, he drops the requirement on mekaneach. So we have now polar opposites. So Gemara rejects this. Why? Elohad diyomer Rabbi Zera ein kinuach ha-peh ela bepas. Now, Rav Zera is telling us, halacha lemaisa, that after you eat gvina, and now you want to eat meat, the first thing you have to do is kinuach ha-peh. And kinuach ha-peh, according to him, means with a piece of bread. So you have to take a piece of bread into your mouth and chew it. Now, wait a second. That seems to reflect the shita of Beit Shammai, because it was Beit Shammai who says Mekaneach, and we paskin like Beis Hillel. So how could Reb Zera mandate Kinuach HaPeh when Beis Hillel say all you need is Meidiach HaPeh, Hadochas HaPeh, you don't need Kinuach? So Reb Zera Kiman, who's he reflecting? Ki Beis Shammai? How could that be? We always paskin like Beis Hillel. Ella, but now let's reinterpret Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai Omer Mekaneach V'lo Boy Meidiach. Again, this is going to be a very rare case with Beit Shammai Yad Meikil, and all they require is to take something into your mouth and chew it. They don't require washing your mouth out. Beis Hillel Omrim Af Meidiach. It's not enough to do Kinuach. You also have to rinse your mouth out. I'm not sure if there's any significance in the sequence here. It could be that first you rinse your mouth out and then you chew something. Could be the other way around. I don't know. I'm inclined to think that Hadacha should come first. But I don't see anything here in any of my notes. If you have anything in your notes, tell me about it. So the Gemara's not happy even with this pshat, that the Beis Hillel added Hadacha Sapeta to Kinuach. Because if that be the case, the listener, we have an entire perek in Masechta Elios that enumerates all the cases, the exceptional cases, where Beit Shammai are mekil and Beis Hillel are machmir. Listener gabi kulei Beit Shammai mechumrei Beis Hillel. Why wasn't this mentioned? It should have been enumerated, because here's another case. Beis Hillel requires not just kinuach, but also hadocha sapet. Ella says the Gemara, no. Beit Shammai omrim mekaneach v'hu adin l'meidiach. Let's go the other way around. Beit Shammai omrim machmirim. And what they say is that you need not only hadocha sapeh. Just one second. Beit Shammai omrim mekaneach v'hu adin l'meidiach. That you need both kinuach hapeh to eat something and also to rinse out your mouth. Ubeis Hillel omer meidiach v'hu adin l'mekaneach. Ah, and Beis Hillel says you have two choices. They say you have two choices. Either you do hadochas hapeh or you can do mekaneach.
Wait, is it or and?
Well, no, so I thought it was Beit Shammai required both. Let's go over again. Ella Beit Shammai omrim mekaneach v'hu adin l'meidiach. So I understood it means you need both. Oh, I see. You're right, Chaim. They both require both kinuach hapeh and meidiach. Mar omer chadu v'lo pligi. They just formulated or expressed themselves in two different ways. So there is no machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. So it's very interesting. We started today with this price of Beit Shammai Omer Mekaneach, Beis Hillel Omer Meidiach, and now we're coming to the conclusion that both saying the identical, the same thing. Okay, let me just take a look here in the Mauritius Moshe. Second.
Which Moshe was that?
His name is Moshe. Moshe. Just one second. Rav Moshe Steinhuis. Okay. So he's one of the Chaburis in the Mir Yeshiva. So just one second. Where was it? Okay. The case of a second. The case of Rabbi Yitzchak. Do you remember they brought him meat and after cheese, and he didn't wash his hands? So he says, "Harishon Nechleku." The Rishonim have a debate. Why doesn't the Gemara mention Kinuach? Now we've come to the conclusion that you need both Hadocha Sapeh and Kinuach.
Kinuach Hapeh, though.
Kinuach Hapeh, there's no mention here. The Gemara says that they objected to Rabbi Yitzchak because he didn't wash his hands. Did he do anything else? I mean, did he do kinuach or hadocha? So the Rashba writes, Yeshu Dakti mehodelo omar velo kinech es piv mashba deboy lekanech es piv bein bayom bein balayla. So the Rashba is learning that clearly he did kinuach haper, and even though he was talking about day, as Rabbi Yitzchak defends himself, that's why he didn't want to require until Sidayim, but nevertheless he would certainly require kinuach haper. And with regard to kinuach haper, says Rashba, there's no difference between day and night, because again, if we're worried about, let's say, particles in his mouth, even during the day he might not be able to remove those particles, so he needs to really rinse out his mouth. So in other words, according to the Rashba, it goes without saying that he was Mekaneh HaSapeh. The Gemara didn't even have to mention that he was Mekaneh HaSapeh, because the whole point of this Gemara is to differentiate between Laila and Yom, and that differentiation doesn't apply to Kinuach HaPeh. He quotes another Sefer that I'm not familiar with, that maybe Rabbi Yitzchak, who was very careful about Milchiks and Fleshiks, he didn't require kinuach haper. I don't understand why he would require netilas yadayim and not kinuach haper. This he doesn't understand. He doesn't explain. Amalei hani mili b'layla will be a mama hachazina. So during the day, I don't need netilas yadayim because I can look at my hands. Nechaku rishonim. Haim dafka k'sha'ochal gvina t'chila ein tzarech litol yada b'yamama. Only in a case where he started with cheese, then he could look at his hands during the day, determine that he doesn't have any lachluchas of shamnunis of gvina, and then he could go ahead and eat the meat. Not so in the case of ochal basar t'chila. Again, we're talking about before they had the hamtana, right? So he's now eating cheese after meat. Tzarech litol yadav gam b'yamama, which I think what he means is that the level or the volume of oily substance that comes from basar, and perhaps even maybe it also has a very transparent color, is such that even during the day you're not going to be able to really determine that you have no shamnunis of basar on your hands. However, the Mordechai and the Rashba, in the name of the Gaon, they say gam bi ochal basa tchila ein tzarech litol yada b'yamama. You ate meat, and it's during the day. You don't have to wash your hands. You're able to determine when you look at your hands whether or not there's any leftover shamnunis of basa. And then all you need is kinuach. All you need is to make sure that your mouth does not have any particles of meat in it. The Ritva quotes Yesh Omrim, to be asra de ikur naharos to neros tuva dino ki yamama. If you have a well lit area at night, it has the same status as the day, and obviously that would have tremendous repercussions for us that we have electricity. So artificial light is just as good as sunlight, according to the Ritva, the name of the Yesh Omrim. But the Shach says that you need an avuka. It's not enough to have candles. You need one torch that has a lot of light.
Again, the electricity would
handle that. Yesh l'stapik ha'im roi l'hach b'mishum she'ein or ha'nero shovel or ha'yom. Is the Shach implying that if you only have candlelight and it's not a torch, that's not going to give you enough light? O mishum de lo plu. Well, maybe he sets up a low plug. Just one second. How would low plug? He says, "Roy lahachmir she'ein or haneru shoveli or ayon." One second. So again, the Shach says that it's mutali or aner. That's only in a case of an avuka. Haritva Kosav Shiroi Lahachmir. What does that mean, Roi Lahachmir? Roi Lahachmir means that even though an avuka has a tremendous amount of light, nevertheless we shouldn't rely on that. We should at night we must require Netilas Yadayim. Separate din that Lila requires Netilas Yadayim. It's like Gzeres HaKosav, a separate halacha. And then he writes, Yesh L'Stapek in Roi Lahachmir. Right, should we say that let's go to Chumrah, and we're not going to accept the distinction between Avuka and Neros, and therefore we're going to say that Lila, according to the Ritva, even if he has an Avuka, we should be Machmir. And Afkeinu B'Teura Chazok, if you have a very strong electric light, if you're going to say it's a low plug, that at night you always require the Netilas Yadayim, you're not going to rely even on the light of an avuka, then you're not going to rely on electricity as well. That's called like a low plug. But if you're going to tell me that we don't know and we're not sure about the light of candles, but we would be sure about the light of an avuka, then we could rely on electricity. Okay then, so we'll stop here.